Hello and welcome to CMO Combo, the podcast from CMO Alliance, where we talk the talk with the marketing leaders who are walking the walk. This week, we're looking at one of the biggest challenges facing many CMOs and marketing leaders. How do you make long-term plans in a world where your tenure in a job relies on making an impact as fast as possible? Our guest, Ariadna Navarro, Chief Growth Officer at BSA Partners, has a tried and tested approach for tackling that CMO catch-22 of balancing immediate results with planning for long-term goals. And she joins the show to share her advice. Hi, Ari. Welcome to CMO Combo. How are you doing today?
Good. Thank you for having me. Excited to chat.
Thank you for joining us, Ari, because it is an exciting conversation we're having because it's really getting to the root of what I think are a lot of the problems that CMOs are facing at the moment. And that is being able to actually do the long-term plans and long-term projects that are part of their remit. And yet they're not given enough time to do it. So it's trying to find that balance between that short-term growth and those long-term plans. So really, really excited to get your insights on that, Ari. But before we do dig into that really, really critical conversation, can you tell us a bit about yourselves and why this topic in particular was one that you wanted to talk about today?
Yeah, I won't bore you with every detail of my life, but I'm Venezuelan and I live in New York. So I came here what now seems like 100 years ago. I worked at Leo Burnett in Venezuela, and I was here on holiday. And a friend of mine said, oh, you should be my headhunter. And I literally asked, what's a headhunter in my country? No, I'm joking. I love Venezuela. It's in my heart. But I got a job at Wonderman. So I moved to sort of the digital and the direct side, which really taught me to use data to make decisions or to bring that into the creative thinking. And then from there, I went into a .com, and then I've been in consulting the 98% of the rest of my career, mostly in innovation. So I really think about what's going to happen 5 years out, and then what are sort of the steps you need to make within an organization to actually either grow or innovate or introduce in your innovation pipeline. What are the things you need to kill? How do you transform and how do you change? So that really has served me well when you think of brand, in thinking of brand more from the business side, or not more, but as you know, as a business asset, in addition to brand as sort of the external side of an organization. So that's why I'm really fascinated when we talk about not just CMOs, but about change and long-term growth, because we look at it in isolation as all these pieces of the puzzle, as opposed to sort of one challenge.
Definitely. So, Ari, let's sort of lay down a bit of foundation, shall we, for this conversation. So everyone who's listening to this has probably seen the stats about the short tenure that CMOs have. Like, I've seen stuff as low as like 18 months or something insane. Yeah. Like, it's crazy. And yet a lot of the projects, a lot of the things that CMOs are responsible for are long-term, and they take longer than that amount of time to really show the payoff. Like, if you think about stuff like brand building, so why aren't CMOs being given the time to actually see the fruits of the labors? Like, why aren't they given the space to actually run these long-term projects to the best of their ability?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a great question. So I think we may be asking the wrong question. And okay. I say that with total respect. I don't necessarily think it's a problem of why aren't CMOs given less or the time they need, and rather, how do organizations see brand? Mm-hmm. And when you ask big legacy companies, you know, startups are different. They have different brand problems. But when you look at big organizations, they saw brand as advertising, as comms, you know, as the front of the house, right? It's like, oh, that's the fluff. I mean, the amount of times I've heard senior people, you know, from C-suite people in big, you know, $7 billion organizations going, well, that's the fluff. You know, so when you think that brand is the fluff, then you see the CMO as a cost center. You know, you're not seeing it as a change agent, or you're not seeing it as a growth engine, or you're not seeing it as a business transformation agent. You're seeing it as the person that manages your advertising, your communications, gets your message out. B2B or B2C, it's irrelevant. It's sort of that, you know, sort of that mentality. Now that's evolved, of course, over time. And you see now this figure of the CMO evolving into chief growth. You know, we work with AT&T a ton. Their new CMO is chief marketing and growth officer. Now, when you have that title in front of you, and I know because that's what I do for a living, you now have to think about how do you grow the organization beyond advertising, you know, beyond awareness, beyond consideration, because you're now responsible for a P&L, or you have KPIs that are hard KPIs that are not just brand. So it's sort of this entire cycle of, it has to change with how you see brand and the role of brand. And we say, you know, brand is a business asset. So if brand is the business asset, all of that is the strategic framework to make decisions. So if you look at brand like that as the best articulation of your business strategy, then that's just a framework. It's just saying, great, if we stand for this and we offer this, and this is how we go to market, then how does that influence product, services, innovation, employee engagement and employee experience? Yes, of course, comms and PR and sponsorships and corporate comms, like, but it's the filter by which you make all your business decisions. So in a way, if you think of it, and I know you guys can't see me, so I'm making a lot of gestures with my hands, but instead of seeing brand sort of on the right at the end of this journey, you're actually moving brand further back, so that it's business to brand, brand to running the organization. So if you make that pivot within the organization, then all of a sudden that CMO, one, has to start to work differently with all these different groups. And then they have a different responsibility, because in a way they end up being sort of the carrier of the business ambition versus responsible for comms.
Definitely, definitely. Brand, it's not just the colors and the logo and your tone of voice. That is every single aspect of a business, every single aspect that customers can potentially interact with. And that even internal branding as well is incredibly important, and an incredibly important role for CMOs, which sort of leads into what I want to ask about the other kind of long-term projects beyond brand building that CMOs are responsible for. They're not necessarily able to achieve the stuff they're looking to do in terms of internal stuff like team building, hiring and acquisition, talent retention, learning and development for those teams as well. Like, are there any other long-term responsibilities that you can think of that CMOs are not necessarily given the space to work within to really achieve, get the results that they can?
Yeah, let's talk about the one you just mentioned for a minute, because it all starts from inside. And if you have an organization that doesn't live the ethos of that brand that you're putting out, then there's a cognitive dissonance in the universe, because even when you're hiring, or in particular when you're hiring, the people that you're going to hire, of course, they're going to do research and read all the stuff and prep for your interview, but their perception of your organization is what they see out in the world. And it may be that you're really hardcore B2B, that you don't put anything out in the world. And that is a data point as well, you know, the absence of understanding of who you are. But what these two have to work together to create, again, sort of that consistent ethos. And we say, you know, we do a lot of what we call CVP, which is customer value prop, and then EVP, which is employee value prop. And we see those, we always say they're either siblings or first cousins, not farther than that, because they're just two sides of the same coin. You know, like, what you put out into the world has to translate into what's motivating to employees. And again, that's really hard work to do, because you have to connect all the dots. And again, because big organizations that have been around for 100 years, 150 years, didn't operate that way. You know, they had a vision and mission, and then they had products that they pushed out. And somewhere along the road, someone said, well, now you need a purpose. So they added that. You know, there's all these pieces of the puzzle that haven't sort of come together. So we've done work on the CVP and EVP side, where the agency becomes responsible for bringing those two together. So you'll have the CMO or the brand teams working with the HR, the talent acquisition teams, and we're sort of in a way sort of taking them along the journey to say, here's how your external facing promise translates into an internal facing promise. So that has to be foundational work. And it's just, and you know, it can be an intellectual exercise. It doesn't always have to be massive research and massive, but an intellectual exercise to make sure that those two are gelling. And that's where the CMO can be the uniter, you know, the translator in chief, we say sometimes. It's like, well, if you have that, if you are able to articulate that business ambition in a compelling and human way, you should be the translator in chief to who, is your question, right? So you've got HR and talent acquisition. You've got the service innovation, product innovation teams. Like, if that is the filter, then are you developing products that meet the needs of your customers, clients today, 5 years out? You know, if you're setting a roadmap for the brand, how is that connected to the product roadmap? And are those two coming together? You know, you're creating entire portfolios. Well, if your brand, let's say it's about simplicity, and you have a portfolio of 100 products that are impossible to navigate, that's another discrepancy. So those two have to work together. You know, experience teams sometimes are separate. You know, we see it both ways, where it's part of the CMO's imperative or it's sort of separate. CTO sometimes works separately. So, you know, I genuinely see, if anything, the role of a CMO or marketing and growth officer growing to sort of be that common thread across digital experience design, product innovation, HR, talent acquisition, even finance, you know, because there's, you know, you're creating business cases for every time you're developing a new product or a new service, or when you're looking at simplifying portfolios. So it's kind of like companies work in silos, or many companies, and we encourage organizations to think about triads or quads, you know, like what are these teams of, you know, marketing, service, HR, finance, or marketing, digital, you know, depending on the makeup of your organization, how do you work together rather than, you know, engineers are building and, you know, service designers are design, like everyone's just sort of doing a little bit in isolation. You save a lot of money too, by the way.
I can imagine so. But these kinds of working relationships, these kinds of working together on these kinds of projects, they require you to build up that kind of level of trust and that level of partnership with people in the C-suite as well. And to my mind, CMOs just aren't being given the opportunity to develop those relationships, especially in worlds where hybrid or remote working are extremely popular. Like, you don't have face-to-face in the office time to really build up the rapport with your CFO or your head of sales or all the different quads and teams that you could be thinking about in terms of how a CMO interacts. So how can CMOs really maximize the time that they have in order to actually build those kinds of relationships? That's got to be a real challenge in order to get buy-in and align.
Yeah, it's such a great question. I am a firm believer of using process to hack transformation, because transformation takes a very long time. So you have to force it to accelerate it. And the reason I'm saying that is because you can build trust the old way, which is, you know, millions of conversations and you prove yourself and you have pilot programs and then you bring and you show, hey, look, this worked, you know, and you're creating adherence over time. Like, that's the way it should be, but that also takes a lot of time. The challenge is that most of these teams have different KPIs. Mm-hmm. So if you have a sales team in this, you know, I worked in automotive for a long time. And when you know, if you've worked in automotive, you know that all the car deal, you know, the car dealership level partnerships, like anyone outside of headquarters, their KPIs are to sell. You know, they're just being judged by how many cars are in the lot, and not even quarterly or monthly, sometimes weekly, sometimes daily. So when you come in there to talk about brand, there it's sort of this disconnected conversation. So it's the CEO's job to say, we have a common goal, or these are your common KPIs. Here's how they come together. And then for better or worse, a CMO has to prove that correlation between investment in brand and sales. Now, it's hard because, again, sales usually are daily, quarterly, monthly. You know, they're immediate, and brands take years to grow. So that's the part that we can't solve for. Like, you can't solve for, hey, it's going to take 3 years for you to see the value of investment in brand. And then you see, like, you're going to have better quality leads at the top of the funnel. You know, you're going to, that trust comes with it. You don't have to, you know, sort of beg for a place at the table, especially in B2B. Like, the brand is a lot of the heavy lifting, but it takes time. So you have to be intentional and be not self-serving, but sort of build your case of, okay, I'm going to do these three things and I'm going to prove these. And then you can pilot that. And then you can say, hey, here's my proof of concept. Let's roll this out. And ultimately, no one's going to say no to running a better business, but you have to prove it.
Definitely. Let's talk about proving it then, shall we? I mean, we've touched on it a few times, throughout the conversation. Let's talk about maybe like as a sort of like use case study of how to go about getting buy-in for a long-term brand building project. Like, who do you need to start off with in terms of getting buy-in? Like, who are the main stakeholders that are going to be important in this conversation?
You need to have people at the BU level, so at the business unit level, that believe in the power brand. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds simplistic, but if you have people that don't understand, they don't have to be expert, but that don't understand it and that don't believe in it, it's a real uphill battle. So that can either come at the BU level, and that's ideal because those are your partners. You know, if you're a CMO, the people that are actually responsible for the actual business mm-hmm. are the people that have the budgets, you know, usually like they end up being your client as a CMO. So you need to have partnerships there, and that needs to feel like you both have skin in the game. If that doesn't exist, then it needs to be a CEO that believes in the power of brand. Because if you have to prove at every single turn that this is worth it, then that's where that burnout happens. And that's why you get your 10 years of like, I'm done. Like, I've literally verbatim had someone, which of course I'm not going to say who, say to me, like, I don't think I can help this organization anymore.
Wow.
And it's heartbreaking because you're sitting there at the agency wanting to, you know, to push them forward, and you can see what they run up against, you know. And again, it's not that they're the enemy or the other person's the enemy or they're wrong or they're right. It's that they're being measured by different things. Mm-hmm. So think of it this way. Like if your KPI was not, I don't know. I mean, it's obviously, you know, engagement, clicks and people hearing mm-hmm. your audience, but if it was whatever, I don't know, how many laughs did you get? And that's all you care about, that the only content you're going to put out there are jokes because you're being measured by laughs. And then if someone comes over and says like, listen, it's not about laughs, it's the quality of the content. It's like long-term, the laughs are short-term. You're like, well, screw that. I'm being measured by laughs. So, you know, I'm breaking it down into very simple terms, but those are the conversations you have to have. And you have to then almost like shake your hands and say like, okay, cool. Like, how do I help you? How do you help me in our common KPIs, and how do we move this forward? Now, I've seen it too, where organizations are creating teams in between. Mm. So where you have the brand team, brand and marketing team, and the business units, and what happened often is those brand teams did great strategy or even great creative or great experiential strategy, what, you know, whatever it is that you're working on. And then they give it to the business units and they're like, great, I got it. Done, fantastic. And then they went in, ultimately they go like, okay, great, get this car for 10% off. Like, they're ultimately going to do whatever it takes to get the sale.
Yeah.
And they're creating teams in between that almost act as consultants, if you will, to make sure that they are helping the execute, like to make sure that the execution happens the way it should be, and to make sure that the strategy is being implemented in a way that it was meant to be, and that the actions that came out of the strategic thinking really sort of stay true to what they were and don't sort of devolve quickly into sales tactics. So I think that's a really great band-aid. And again, example of like process can hack behavior change. So up until the time when you have them working seamlessly together, these teams in the middle actually, I think, really help to execute.
I imagine they'd be really helpful as well in terms of measuring success and like looking at actual like attribution from brand building activities, particularly with more and more models rising that have more effective multi-touch attribution. I think that's going to make it a lot easier to show the benefit of brand building stuff after the fact. But I still think it's going to be hard to get the buy-in to initially launch these kinds of things.
Yeah, I mean, it's an area I'm passionate about because we keep trying, but it takes big commitment. So one of the things that we want to get to is, can we prove or show early indicators of change? So let's say I'm tracking your podcast for a year, there are points where you have some peaks and valleys. I can learn from that. At some point, maybe I have 3 years of data or 4 years of historical data. I can now really create diagnostic models to say, well, these are early indicators. Hey, it rained today. The days, you know, when it rains, your podcast is down, you know, so you can start to correlate. And then when you start to correlate, then you can make better investment decisions. Like, that's the holy grail. That's where we all want to get to. For better or worse, where we're at, it's very immediate. It's like touch point optimization, all again geared towards sales versus long-term value. And that's a really big conversation, because the argument that companies make, including myself, is stronger brands have higher market cap. You look at the stock market, you know, it's the brands that everyone admires and recognizes and loves, you know, all the, and it's always the 10 usual suspects for a reason. So we have the proof that investing in brand matters. Investing in B2B brands matters even more. You see, there's statistics from everyone, from Harvard to McKinsey, you know, to Gartner, every research ever done that says brand matters even more in B2B, because it's a trust issue and it's a risk mitigation issue. And when you're investing, I don't know, $1 million with IBM, well, that's, you know, the higher, you know, higher risk than buying a toothpaste for $3. So you have to consider, you know, that trust really, you know, so it matters even more. So the proof is there. Somehow there's still, again, that conversation, because I think it's breaking all behavior. You know, it's how a lot of companies have worked in the past. You know, big companies just have a lot of products or a lot of complexity. Sometimes it's impossible, or it feels impossible, to pull it into one single idea. But it's just hard work, like with anything.
Definitely. If anything, I almost think like sort of the rise of digital marketing, the digital revolution is almost put. I mean, obviously, there's been a lot of benefits to the marketing industry for that. There's a lot of capabilities that we have now. But the idea that suddenly, oh, we can measure everything, kind of put some, I'm not going to say restraints on CMOs, but it certainly meant that it made it a lot more difficult to get buy-in on activities that we know work. But until potentially very recently, with the rise of AI-driven technologies and multi-attribution models and all that stuff, wasn't really possible to show the attribution for, particularly in sort of like the B2B space where you have these really long buying cycles. Like, if your CRM, your analytics measure is only tracking from sort of like the most recent touch point to the conversion, then you're missing out on all that brand building, that technology, all that brand building that led to someone making that sale at that point. I saw a meme, a cartoon, I don't know what you want to call it, on LinkedIn recently. And it was this person, I know it's mainly like a B2C example, but I think it's still relevant B2B. Like, this person saw a billboard, they saw an advert, they saw something in a magazine. And then finally they were on the phone, they were browsing on the phone, they saw the shoes that they liked, and thought, oh, we'll buy those shoes. And it cuts to a boardroom and everyone's looking at their analytics model and they said, oh, that purchase came from mobile, we're just going to invest more money in mobile. So I think that's, yeah, the digital idea of measuring everything, we need to get to the point where we can measure everything appropriately and effectively, I think. And that's going to be a big
change. That would mean, Will, and I have a little bit of beef with that, because you're 1,000% right. That's exactly how people think. And I've heard someone the other day said to me, like, you can't measure, it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, how do you measure? And I understand where it's coming from, right? But how do you measure the emotional impact of something? You know, how would you measure if, you know, if you and I get along or not, or if we have rapport or not? I'm going to have to post-rationalize it in a survey. You know, like, I may not even know that I like you or not, you know, until maybe you ask me. Then when you ask me, I'm going to rationalize. Like, there's just such a obsession, for sure, because you need to scale. So again, I understand it's my job to think of these systems and to scale them, but it's very difficult to do that. And the best way that we can sort of push the an emotional, I'm doing air quotes for those listening and not seeing me, is it just means that it's not hard values, like, meaning you're not just selling functional things that are tangible. You're not saying, my features are better. You are not saying, I don't know, I sell steel and my steel is more resilient than yours by 20%. Like, it's not a hard sell. It's a, hey, I'm selling trust, or I'm selling confidence or empowerment or achievement, or, you know, like sort of the, that higher order Maslow. So how do you measure that?
That's always going to be a big obstacle, isn't it? And I mean, it gets back to that, probably as old as marketing has been around, that debate about whether it's a science or an art at the end of the day. Like, how do you measure the worth of the Mona Lisa smile, for example? How do you measure the worth of an emotional piece of advertising or emotional piece of branding? And at the end of the day, there's some people who just aren't going to be convinced by those kinds of, that kind of motivation behind putting out certain activations. Like, at the end of the day, a CFO, I'm not going to besmirch all CFOs and say they're like soulless robots and stuff, but CFOs at the end of the day, they want to look at the bottom line, and selling smiles, selling laughs, selling tears isn't necessarily going to move the bottom line for them. So they need some kind of measurement. They need some kind of data to back it up. Of course, us marketers, us fun, emotional, empathetic people, we can know that empathy works. We can know that emotion works, but at the end of the day, we need to sell it to our audience internally. We need to sell it to people who aren't necessarily coming from that standpoint. As you said, like, some people just aren't going to believe in the power of brands. Some people just aren't going to believe in the power of emotion. So we need some data to back that up.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and that's right. I think the not easy, but the linear path to get to that is, and I was just revisiting the old Steve Jobs keynote when they when he launched Think Different. And he was saying, you know, the stuff we all know, like, a brand is a set of values, and, you know, we're not going to win by saying we make better boxes. You know, it's just, you're not going to win by saying your computer's better than the other one. Like, it's just not how you're going to win. It's a set of values. So that's the best way that I have to sort of force the conversation with clients who are maybe more on the functional side. It's like, that's fine. And it doesn't mean you're not going to say you're 20% better than X, but you have to think about adherence. Like, stickiness doesn't come from the claim. A sale, a B2B side, for example, like, is it necessarily just going to come from, and a lot of it for sure at the bottom of the funnel, but that top of the funnel conversation, consideration, all that stuff, like, that's not going to come from, like, our, I don't know, financial analysis software is 10 times faster than the other. Like, we don't, human beings don't think that way. You know, we understand information and stories. That's how we comprehend information. So values are a story. Like, what is the story? What do you stand for that people want to be attached to? Like, we work with a lot of tech, and you always hear, like, oh, you know, the Googles, and, you know, they get all this credit, and it's true, but that's because they stand for something. And whether they have the best product or not in any given, you know, sort of territory, I'm sure some people will say yes, and some people will say absolutely not. But they win on brand, you know, they win on, hey, they stand for access and simplicity, access for all. And there's something compelling about that that people gravitate toward, B2B and B2C. So, you know, there's so many examples out there of how do you translate that? And you're right. Well, like, I mean, correlation attribution is a B. You know, like, it's just really difficult to get to it because of journeys not being linear. But if you can if you can break it down and say, great, here's your business ambition. Okay, what do we stand for? Okay, these are your values. Okay, those values are what you think is, like, you stand for, your ethos. That's what we call brand. Okay, well, how do you turn that into, it doesn't always have to be fluffy, but how do you turn that into an idea that's compelling and that people want to be connected to or connected with? Because we're not that rational. You know, there's, I don't know if you follow Dan Ariely or behavioral scientists, but, you know, he has this whole book of irrational behavior. And it's, we are ultimately sort of irrational, you know, in a lot of the decisions we make, and that a lot of it is driven by emotion. And I know it's not the, you know, the in thing to talk about these days, but in a world where we're bombarded by so much, a moment where you connect is 10 times more important today than it was 10 years ago.
Definitely, definitely. And I think, yeah, and it's the case in B2B as much in B2C these days as well. Like, I would definitely say I have an emotional connection with some of the B2B tools that I use in my work life. A lot of that is because I use them in my home life as well. I think that is part of it, that blurring between work and home life. There isn't so much of that separation between church and state anymore. So like Zoom, for example, we're talking on Zoom right now, Ari. Zoom kept me connected with people during the pandemic, during lockdown. It allows me to talk to my mum regularly, even though we live in completely different cities on different sides of the country. So I could see myself using Zoom throughout my work life because it's, I had that home life connection, and also it's convenient as well. Why shouldn't I use the same tools that I use at work as I use at home? Like, it just makes sense. So I do have this emotional connection with B2B stuff, and I could see that continuing as more and more, like the way we work, the way our home and work lives blur together, that emotional connection with the brands that you work with is going to be incredibly important. And yeah, ways to capitalize on that is going to be the way forward. Well, at least from my perspective, I'm sure there's other people out there, lots of people who are very heavily data driven are thinking, no, Will, that's wrong. But for me, I think emotional branding, emotional connections between you and your audience is going to be even more important moving forward, particularly in a world where we've got AI pumping out loads of stuff all the time. And it's going to be the whole idea of like search marketing is going to be changing as well. Like, how do you cut through all that noise? How do you actually make sure that people are coming back to you each time? It's that emotional connection at the end of the day.
Yeah. And you're saying something really interesting. You're making me actually think of it differently, which is great. So you're, while Zoom doesn't hit you with, hey, connect with family and friends, you know, like they don't, that's not their play. Their play is fully functional. You're assigning new value to that because of what it enables. And you're assigning emotional value in the case of what you, you know, of the story of like, it enables me to connect with family, friends, whatever. You know, I'm sure you can double click on that. So the work that we have to do as brand people is to understand the possibility of that assignment of value and then say, okay, great. So I think ultimately, yeah, Zoom will connect. Connect will lead to seeing friends, that drives happiness. Cool. How do we instill some of that into the conversation, the experience, the relationship? And sometimes the answer is like, you don't need to, or you shouldn't, or, you know, I'm not advocating for every brand to have an emotional side, but you have to understand the human value. And that is sort of, I think, the driving force for everything I do and have always thought about this business is really digging deep to understand what's the value you're bringing or creating. And is there a bit of joy in that? And by joy, I don't mean like, oh, it's fun and like at all. I mean, joy is an emotion. You know, joy is, hey, you open Zoom and there's when you log off, there's a something, you know, a feeling, an emotion. And by joy, I just honestly, what that means for me is just a positive emotion versus a negative, you know, versus a negative one, because you don't want to re-engage with a company that doesn't feel right. We, you know, a client doesn't want to hire us if there's no, if there's not a human element of connection. So it's interesting to think of assignment of value, not from us, the brand people, or the CMO, you know, the client, but at a minimum understanding how you as the end user will assign value and then think of, okay, can I use that in a good way?
I mean, I will say, Ari, I don't know if it's the case in the US, but in the UK, Zoom did run a lot of ads during lockdown aimed at consumer audiences about being a way to stay connected and stuff. So there is that kind of perception still floating around there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say it's the same for quite a few. Zoom is just an example, I assume, because it's sitting right in front of me. But there are quite a few other tools as well that I think I have an emotional connection with and I would probably use for the rest of my career if I have a choice. And there are certain tools where I don't have that connection with. I'm not going to name names because my boss might be listening to this and I don't want them to know which parts of the tech stack I can't stand. But yeah. You do build this connection with B2B brands as a user that I think will continue and carry on when you get to the position where you are a decision maker in the types of tools that you want people to use. Because you want the people working under you to have access to the same or even better opportunities than what you've had previously in terms of the tools they have access to. And I think that's another long-term project that CMOs don't necessarily have the time to work on, is the kinds of tools they're equipping their teams with, the kinds of tech stacks they're building. Like a tech stack, you don't just build it overnight. Tech stack gets built in iterations, it gets added to, it gets expanded. Sometimes it gets reduced as well. And if a CMO doesn't have the opportunity to really develop that, it's going to really hamper their ability to, well, the team's ability to do stuff as well, because the CMO might come in and decide, oh no, we want to use different tools because I have that emotional connection with this brand. So yeah, they, it all, yeah, kind of all fits together a little bit, I think, in terms of this long-term planning.
I mean, I think it's interesting that you're bringing up things like tech stack, because it, I mean, it made me think about, like, again, if you're, you, beacons of the brand, you know, the CMO sort of holds obviously that, that in their power. And let's say you are in an organization that believes that brand is a business asset, so it's just the articulation of where you want to go, then you really have to think about, okay, what are the foundational elements, steps, whether that's tech, engagement strategies, experience, whatever it is, like, what are the foundational things you need to build to get to the brand, where the brand wants to go? And then what are the transformational things you need to do to get to where the brand needs to go? And I say that because, again, sometimes you need to bring in a tool or a service or a product or whatever that's going to help think differently. You know, like, okay, let's say you want to drive more of a culture of innovation and you want to, you know, create more brainstorming. Okay, fine. Then I'm going to go and use whatever, you know, whatever your favorite brainstorming online tool is, of, you know, do you have to force it out? So like that's in a way a brand decision. Like it's okay, how do I drive a culture of innovation? Because the brand stands for innovation. So that means internally we have to innovate. Great. That's a conversation. That's when you can influence that. That's a transformative exercise or tool or service versus foundational. It's like, so the foundational stuff is like that things that we do to work better, to optimize for efficiency. Like, I don't know that the CMO needs to be involved in that. I guess if it helps, back to the question of like the brand, like if it helps you deliver on that brand promise, yes, I guess is the short answer. If it doesn't, then no, because it'll become a question of prioritization. You know, CMO has a lot on their plate. So it's not that they can't have, that they wouldn't be a valuable thinker or, you know, opinion in whatever conversation you're having. The question is, like, is that a priority?
And then what if the CMO's perceived priority doesn't align with what the business thinks their priority should be? Like, that's when this disconnect happens. Like, what if the CMO's priority is on,
they'll get
these
fired.
Different stages?
Yeah. I mean, I've seen it. I'm not going to honestly name names, but maybe a couple years ago, there was this really famous person that was named CMO. I think she was maybe chief brand and marketing. And the background and the strategy, it was just completely off to what the company actually needed. It was a company going through a lot of bad press, and it was honestly in crisis management mode. And you could see that where they were taking the brand was almost, it was almost like disassociated from where the company was at, and sort of perceptually, and what this brand needed to do, a big global brand. So you can't, you know, you can't just, that's a problem sometimes too with like rock star CMOs that are like just more about their brand. And we've seen that as well. So I think it's, you need a really thoughtful, data-centric, human-obsessed CMO that understands business really well. And that can then work with all the pieces, because it's going to change depending on the size of the organization, the challenges they have. I think part of that handshake in the early days of, okay, finance person, experienced person, product person, and, you know, like, of, okay, here are the three fires, and then here's the things we're going to start to transform over time. Great, let's agree on how we're going to work through that. Then you tackle the next layer and the next layer.
Definitely. Do you think it's a case that one of the reasons for this short tenure, and the reason that many CMOs aren't able to execute these long-term plans and stuff, isn't necessary because that it isn't necessarily because they're not given enough time. It's because they're only being brought in to deal with these specific scenarios that are in front of them at the time. So as you were saying, like the crisis management situation, the example you gave, they clearly wanted a CMO to come in who was an expert at dealing with that. Whereas they hired someone who was clearly a very well-qualified CMO, but they weren't necessarily the expert that they needed at the time. And maybe that's the case that's happening, that companies are growing and they reach a point where they outgrow the needs of the CMO at the time. Do you think that's maybe the case, that it's maybe the
situation? I think it's a really hard job, honestly. I really do, because I mean, I have so much empathy because you have so much responsibility. Yet, I think the point you're making is you're not always able to impact the business in any real way. So when the brand, let's say it's not growing, or your whatever brand, either brand health, or if you're measuring sale, whatever, however, you know, every company does it differently, then they, you know, you're the scapegoat because, again, you're a cost center or you're seen as a cost center. And very often, again, like when companies don't perform, where do they cut? Where are the first cuts? Marketing, because it's a cost center. You're not going to invest in brand. Why am I going to invest in brand? It's not working. So it's a vicious cycle. And that's why I was saying you need a CEO that understands the value of brand over time, and or these business unit heads that value brand and that can create a partnership with the CMO. Otherwise, you come in, you have these big dreams, you know, you want to transform the business, and you're like, oh, wait, I can't impact the innovation pipeline. Okay, well, then what? I can't promise that if I'm not delivering it at a product level. But you don't have a say at the product level sometimes, you know, so that it's the correlation. A brand is in this independent thing that CMOs don't own the brand. Mm-hmm. Even though that's what we have said, like they don't. The brand's the business. The business is the brand.
No, they're caretakers for the brand. Like the brand.
Thank you. That's a better brand, way to put it.
A brand should be able to survive once that CMO is not in that position anymore. Like a good CMO creates a brand that has legs and will go on without them. Like Coca-Cola has had many, many different marketing leads and heads of global marketing and eventually CMOs and stuff like that. But the Coca-Cola brand goes on without them. And a good CMO creates a brand that lasts and continues potentially.
Yeah, centuries. I mean, I have seen very good CMOs and not so good ones. I mean, the better ones change organizations and convince their CEOs to move the business in this direction or that, or, you know, they will use the brand and then test 18 different ways in and then say, these are the three features, let's now go invest. You know, like those are the best partnerships. And that's, I think, when it's sort of these, this beautiful kind of marriage of the CEO and the CMO, of like being able to articulate it, but also to push, because the CMO brings the customer or your audience or whatever, B2B, B2C, doesn't matter. You should be bringing that perspective. And then of course the execution, you know, what works and how do you get to them and all that stuff. The CEO is normally thinking obviously of the business and growing capabilities, expansion, growth strategy, all that stuff. You know, complexity of the business, finances, you know, P&Ls. So it's a dance. You know, they have to influence each other. Those are the best partnerships.
For sure. I think partnership is the perfect term for it as well, because it's two people supporting each other to succeed at the end of the day. A CEO should be able to trust and rely on their CMO, and the CMO should be able to have the support they need from their CEO as well. So yeah, I think partnership's a great way of putting it. Ari, I've realized we covered so much here. Let's see if we can tie stuff together, maybe with sort of like three golden rules that CMOs should be keeping in mind when it comes to trying to get buy-in, trying to execute long-term plans. And then maybe let's have a quick chat about how you think things might change in the future. Like obviously the business landscape's changing, the types of people who are in these kinds of positions are changing. So is it always going to be like this, or are we going to see a bit of a change in the future? But let's focus on those three golden rules for now.
Three rules. So I think the first is the one I just made, which is partnership. Mm-hmm. You can't go it alone. Simple as that. And that partnership, you have to figure a way, which are the strategic partnerships. If it's you, the CEO, if it's you, business units, if it's you, whatever those are. If you want to impact the organization and create change, you have to find a way to do it holistically, and you have to find those partnerships. The second thing I will say is be adamant, rigorous, and intentional about creating value for the brand. And that could be emotional, by the way. It doesn't have to be only functional, but creating value, and I'm not stopping there, value for all, for multiple stakeholders. And what that means is, if you're recommending doing X, Y, and Z for the brand, for a product, forget the brand, for a product, let's say you're in B2B, it's a service. You know, are you thinking about, is that creating financial value? Are you thinking about, is it creating employee value? Are you thinking, is it creating, of course, user value? Because when you have an idea that can create multiple, what we call multiple stakeholder value, then that idea is, you know, bulletproof, because you're driving growth at multiple levels. And I guess the third, which is more my motto, but I would love CMOs to always have, this is what I call rigorous imagination. And that to me means exactly what those two words are. Like, never stop learning, never stop understanding the business, never stop, you know, getting smart, use data for everything you can, but you have to have an imagination, and you have to have the ability to see things others don't, because you're still the caretaker of an idea. Mm-hmm. And that's what a brand ultimately is, a group of things that add up to an idea. So if you're not thinking about, or if you don't have imagination, if you don't have an ability to, you know, poke a hole in the competitor so they have to reposition themselves, or if you don't have the ability to honestly see the future in 3 years, you know, so that you can lay that ground, if you don't have the ability to figure out how to solve things internally, then just being great, a great marketer, is just not enough, at least in big organizations, and even in small, because in small you have to, you have other problems. You have to scale, you have to create discipline. Usually a lot of smaller companies haven't invested in the structure. Like, it's other challenges. But rigorous imagination, and it's attention in those two words, but it's kind of how I see our jobs in solving these big problems.
Yeah, it's a great way of putting it, and great rules altogether there, Ari. So yeah, just to wrap things up, let's talk a little bit about the future, because obviously the types of people who are in CEO roles are changing. We're getting a lot more diversity, not just in terms of people's backgrounds, but also in terms of people's professional backgrounds as well. Like, we actually just published a podcast today that was all about marketers reaching the CEO level. We're seeing a few more and more marketing background CEOs, even in like major companies. Is that going to cause a big sea change? Are marketers going to suddenly have all this freedom to work with, all these opportunities to dive into all these big projects?
Yeah.
Or like, how do you think things are going to go in the future?
Yeah, I think there are a handful of examples. So I don't see a sea, like, you know, a sea of change. It's been honestly a decade to get to exactly the place that you talked about. You know, I remember when we started tracking agency people that went to CMO roles, and that was revolutionary. Usually CMO roles were like business school. It was the exact same profile. And all of a sudden you had, wait, you worked at LibreNet and now you're the CMO of Target? What? How did that happen? That's insane. You know, so that was, it's just been years and years in the making of like that evolution from that, again, like, oh, if, you know, that belief of like, if you're creative, or if you have an imagination, you can't be a good business person. So I don't know. I don't know that it's, I mean, maybe it's been forced now because of AI, and because we all have to have this rigorous imagination, because we do all have to think a lot quicker and learn constantly. Like, we're telling everyone at BSA, like, the best path to AI is every day on it, you know, learn how to write prompts, learn what we can use it for, learn if we develop smaller little services. Like, we're going to have to, everyone's going to have to really have this philosophy of the typical innovation philosophy, which is iterate and fail early, you know, learn, iterate, fail early, and then try the next new thing. So I think it's less of a kind of role, meaning like the CMO moving to a CEO, and it's more of the kind of mindset that's going to be required to manage a business. And that elasticity of thinking is a bit of a new thing for older, sort of more traditional, and I don't mean old by age, I mean just traditional CEOs that were very linear in their thinking. Mm-hmm. I mean, I find myself having to think of things differently all the time. And I naturally think in not linear ways, but in sort of making random connections with random things. But that's not the traditional, you know, C-suite at a company kind of way of thinking. That's, and they have to change. Everyone's going to have to change. There's no other way.
For sure, for sure. We are going into big changes right now, but we're still in very early days of those changes as well. So it'll be interesting to see how things develop, both in terms of like the leadership of companies and also how these technologies develop as well in terms of the roles that emerge out of that. So it'll be interesting to explore that in the future. Thank you very much, Ari, for this conversation.
Thank you.
It's been fascinating. I've really enjoyed it. I think we've covered so much as well. I think there's loads of valuable stuff there. So thank you very much for your time today, Ari.
It was my pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for having me. And I hope I didn't bore people to death with how obsessed I get about the topic. But thank you for giving me the time.
Well, I think a lot of our audience are just as obsessed with the topic of brand and the topic of long-term plans for CMOs as you are, Ari. So I'm sure they've very much enjoyed your insights today. And I'd like to thank our audience as well for listening. We'll be back soon with some more CMO combos. Like what you heard from this CMO combo? Make sure you hit that subscribe button and leave a rating so the whole world knows how great it was.